You are listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm Randall White in for Beth Ruyak today. Deadly mass shootings like the recent killings in Thousand Oaks are preventable, according to our next guest. His new research out of UC Davis delves into this theory, saying there are already two policies out there that, if properly used, could reduce, if not stop, future mass shooting incidents. Dr. Garen Wintemute is considered one of the top experts in this field of study. And Dr. Wintemute, welcome to Insight. Nice to have you here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with your premise that there are already policies available that could be used more efficiently. What are they? Let's go down those.
Sure. Let's start with gun violence restraining orders, which allow, in extreme circumstances, firearms to be recovered from somebody at a time of crisis. It's a law that was put into place after a mass murder in Isla Vista, which probably could have been prevented. Gun violence restraining orders have been available in California for a couple of years. We're doing an evaluation, and as part of that, I am aware of two mass shootings in California that did not occur because gun violence restraining orders were used to prevent shooters from acquiring the firearms they were going to use in events that they had threatened to commit.
And these restraining orders vary from state to state. Is there any restraining order on a federal level?
There is not. Legislation's been introduced. It's gone nowhere. I suspect that it will go somewhere if it's reintroduced next year.
And your second measure that you believe could be used more efficiently?
Background checks. We look at the negative here. There are at least two mass shootings, not in California, that occurred because background checks were improperly done or were done on incomplete data. One huge problem, it's turned out, is that the data background checks are run on are incomplete. There are tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands, of prohibiting events that are not in the data. So people who are prohibited clear the background check because the information on their prohibition is not available.
Do these also vary from state to state, and is there a federal requirement?
Well, there is a federal requirement for a background check if the sale is done through a licensed retailer only, and direct private party sales are not subject. In California and a number of other states, that policy has been broadened. We require a background check for essentially all sales of firearms in California.
Does California have the strictest rules when it comes to gun purchases?
That's a hard question to answer. On paper, we have a very assertive regulatory regime. Other states do too. But what's on paper isn't what's actually done. I happen to think that enforcement is also in general very strong here in California. I don't see a lot of value in rank ordering states according to the details of their policies.
But the policies themselves, if a state has those policies in place and they are enforcing it, is there evidence to show that it works?
Yes, it varies from policy to policy, but let me give you a California example. A number of years ago, we broadened our denial criteria to prohibit people who'd been convicted of violent misdemeanor crimes from purchasing firearms. And our group did a study of that, in essence, policy experiment, and found that at the individual level, that new policy reduced risk of future violence among the people who were directly affected by 25% to 30%, which is a huge difference. And there have been studies in other states suggesting that GVROs are also very effective.
How do people get access to guns in states where background checks are required, yet they may have something in their backgrounds that would prevent them from owning a gun?
So if we're talking about a state where a background check is required pretty much all the time, there is an illegal market, and some people use that. To be honest, the more common situation is states have not gone beyond federal law, and background checks are required only when the sale is by a licensed retailer. But there's a parallel legal market in which the sellers are private individuals. And in those states, a person who has no criminal intent and is not prohibited can just arrange to buy a firearm. I've photographed hundreds of these transactions. They can take less than a minute. But if the buyer is either a prohibited person or has criminal intent and doesn't want a record, that's really the only option for them. These are purchases that are anonymous. They are undocumented. The firearms are not traceable, and it's legal.
Doesn't this lead into the argument that you hear from gun rights advocates that if guns are outlawed, then only criminals will own guns?
Well, first off, the policy that background checks be required for all firearm transfers is supported by more than 80% of gun owners and more than 70% of self-identified NRA members. So, yeah, there's a fringe. But to give that point of view its due, yes, there is an illegal market, but that's what we have cops for. And undercover operations and so on. Firearm violence is a big and complicated health and social problem, and we need a lot of solutions implemented all at once to deal with it.
Let's talk a little bit about high-capacity magazines,
sure,
which hold, the definition is what, more than 10 rounds
That's
of
correct.
Ammunition? A recent state law banning their possession has been put on hold by an injunction. Would that law make, in your mind, California safer if it's allowed to move forward?
I would be really interested if that law gets implemented. We have this problem. There are, my guess is, millions, certainly tens of thousands, of those magazines already in the state. The law that is on hold would ban possession of those magazines. There's no mechanism in place to recover those magazines. So at least at this moment, it's not clear to me that the prevalence of those magazines in the population would decrease. And we've outlawed commerce in those magazines for more than 20 years. So the reason I hesitated when you asked the question is, as a researcher, what I would like to do is, if that law goes into effect, see what happens. My hypothesis would be that having the law actually in force on the books would make a difference, but I would be in what we call equipoise, unsure of what the outcome would be. That's part of the fun of science, to be honest, is we walk in saying, we don't know, let's find out.
The whole point of research, right?
Exactly right.
We're speaking with Dr. Garen Wintemute of UC Davis. He's an expert on the public health effects of gun violence. His new research is about how to stop mass shootings and was recently published in the New England Journal of Medicine. So undoubtedly, you've seen the social media debate about whether doctors should even be at the table for firearm policy discussions. Gun rights advocates say doctors should stay in their lane, is the expression. What's your take about the role physicians and researchers should play? You have personal experience.
I was going to say, I have 35 years as a physician. I'm a practicing ER doc, and that's what got me into doing the science. So obviously, my career is testimony to my belief that doctors have a role to play here. Fortunately, I now have a whole lot of company. What happened was the American College of Physicians, which is the Association of Internal Medicine Doctors in the United States, which has really taken a leadership role here for a while, published a very detailed set of recommendations for its members based on very detailed review of the evidence. Here's what we think doctors ought to do. And we've been working with that organization and published a number of articles in their journal, kind of fleshing out, and here's how to go about talking to your patients and when you might want to and so on. So that policy paper comes out. And the NRA tweets, as you mentioned, that doctors should basically, they're a bunch of know-nothing do-gooders and they ought to keep their minds on their own narrow scope of work. They kicked a hornet's nest. And what we have seen from trauma surgeons and ER docs and internists and others is the response has been basically, excuse me, let me show you the blood in the room after we've, let me show you the chair in which I sit and tell mothers that their children have been shot and killed. This is my lane. Actually, one trauma surgeon talked about how often she did this and said, this isn't just my lane, this is my effing highway, to quote her tweet. part of what makes me really optimistic about this development is there's clearly been a lot of pent-up demand on the part of physicians. They are off the sidelines. They're getting involved. And as I mentioned, a group of us have been developing infrastructure for more than a year so that as they say, I want to do something, here are the materials showing you how to do it. Here are handouts for your patients. All of this stuff is up on the web already.
Finally, your center is state-funded at UC Davis. But many researchers struggle to acquire the money needed to explore the role of firearms in public health. Was it tough for your program to get the funding?
We spent 25 years struggling. There still is some federal money for research, not from CDC, but it comes from the National Institute of Justice. For a while, it came from the National Institutes of Health. I don't know that there will be an increase in federal funding next year, but there are other states looking at stepping up to fill the gap. There are a few private foundations that have been involved for a long time, and several others have come online in recent years, and still more are making plans to jump in the near future. So I think we're going to see an increase in research funding. I don't know if we'll see any of that increase from the federal government.
All right, gun violence expert Dr. Garen Wintemute of UC Davis, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on Insight.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we, of course, will have links to that study on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Cap Radio Insight here on your NPR station.